Blog Talk Radio.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares to save a world in despair? Who really cares?
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, brother, brother.
25, it's going to be a black male in a white t-shirt.
There's far too many of you dying.
14 million more
you
Americans
know
would be
got to find
next
a
year.
Way.
This deadly mass shooting
to bring some
love
here today. Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and here today. Oh, look at life. It's fast. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
Everyone, and welcome to another segment of Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Terry Hines, your host. A reminder, we do not own the rights to the music you just heard. Also, please click tag share, tell someone Let's Talk Fort Worth is on the air, and we're talking about police reform tonight. How do we prevent the next hashtag? How do we prevent the next police shooting? How do we create a better outcome when people of color are stopped by police? When I say the names Eric Garner, Michael Brown, Sandra Bland, Tatiana Jefferson, Michael Jacobs, Botham John, Dante Wright, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, Philando Castile, Alton Sterling, Freddie Gray, and Tamir Rice, you will immediately think they were all killed by police, none had weapons, and all were African Americans. Tonight, we want to discuss police reform and how we can prevent the next hashtag. This week, Mesquite police killed Ashton Pink, who was having what they call a mental health crisis. So how do we make it stop? Like Marvin just said, what's going on? And why does it happen so often to people who look like me? So, y'all, we're talking police reform tonight. If you are one of my panelists, and we've talked about who you are, if you're on my phone line, if you would press 1 now so that I can find you on the board. If we talked about you being on the panel tonight and you're on the phone line, I need you to press 1 now. Okay, I'm going to open the phone lines at 817-443. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Hi, this is Elizabeth Roper.
Hi. Elizabeth, how are you?
Hi.
Good evening.
Oh, good evening. I'm really looking forward to being a part of this conversation. I really don't know how to be the one to start it, but I certainly do have 2 cents on it, that's for sure.
All right, then. We're going to go to 682-223. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Hey, good evening. This is Leon Reed. How are you?
Fine, Attorney Reed. How are you?
I am doing well, thank you, and thank you for the invite to participate in tonight's conversation, and hopefully we'll be able to enlighten someone and plan the next step instead of and move closer to just actually doing something instead of just always having the conversations, you know.
Thank you.
I agree. I absolutely agree. We're going to go to 817-446. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Can you hear me, Carrie? Can you hear me, Carrie?
We can. We absolutely can. So let's get started. Hey, Bob. We're going to get started, and we're hoping the rest of them are going to chime in a little later. This is where we're at. Okay, somebody's got, Bob, is that noise in your background?
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bob, is that?
Okay, I think the noise was in your background. How do we make the police shooting stop? How do we get to a point of police reform where an officer has a process in which he goes through before he takes a lethal shot? How do we get that or get our officers to a point? Okay, Bob, I think you have some noise in your background. Let's see if that's you. Okay, that noise is your – okay. I think that noise was you, Bob. Okay, let's see if you can fix that. Okay, so how do we get to a point where the police shooting stop? It's got to be some type of reform. Attorney Reed, we'll start with you. How does police reform look to you?
Well, one, there's no single answer. There's no magic bullet. There's a lot of different things that have to be attacked and addressed. In order to ultimately get to where we're going. And I was reminded recently that I didn't take one giant step to walk to Austin. I took a series of small steps, and I got there. And while I think we're well beyond the series of small steps, we do have to start taking incremental steps towards real reform. And what we were focused on were basically 3 areas, the front end, which is recruiting and training, the middle, which was the daily police encounters and how they should look, and then on the tail end, accountability, because if there's no consequence for doing it wrong, there's no incentive to do it right. And so we can start with each one of those getting better recruits and then really addressing the mentality that really shapes the training of the modern-day police force. There are different philosophies with policing. Some are guardian, some neighborhood, and some warrior style, which means, you know, that they want to actively go out and track people down and arrest people versus guardian, which are more community caretaking in their approach. And there's data out of Volusia County, the sheriff's department there, that shows, you know, hey, you can still do your job policing without being overly aggressive, and I said do it right now and going hands-on immediately. And so on the front end when we start training recruits, they cannot be trained to have an us against them mentality. That will never work, and that's what I'm getting from a lot of police officers with whom I've spoken. And then you have the people that once they graduate, they'll tell you, okay, you learn what you learned in the academy. Let me show you how we do it on the street. And they continue to foster. So they say, Leon, even when we get that good candidate, that person who joined the police department for all of the right reasons, the training process can turn that person into the type of problem officer that we're dealing with now. But it's got to be a multifunction approach, and it's got to be heavy on the accountability side. And so we have to address qualified immunity at some point and making individual officers responsible and opening up city coffers when they do it wrong. Because if the city starts spending enough monies, then the mayors are going to start looking at the police chiefs and saying, you know, we have to stop doing it the way we're doing it. It is costing us too much money. Find a better way.
You know, if we're just talking about spending money in terms of lawsuits, I'm assuming you're meaning, Fort Worth doesn't pay out like other cities in other states. Why is that?
You're absolutely right. They will fight you tooth and nail when it comes to, you know, being civilly responsible. And part of that is the structure of the council members and, you know, who's been on the council. We have a real good opportunity, and I'm not going to segue too far from the main topic, but, mm-hmm. you know, a lot depends on who you have representing you on the council. And that's been the mindset of those people on the council. They'll talk a good game, but when it comes down to admitting, hey, your officers did wrong, you know, they'll fight tooth and nail to stop from cutting that check. And as long as the city isn't cutting checks and they're fighting every lawsuit, then the council members are being disingenuous. But we have to still position ourselves to keep narrowing their way out of these lawsuits. And each lawsuit that gets brought is really taking away another way out of the next one. And you hate to say the next one, but it's going to be coming. But we have it's just a mindset in Fort Worth that's really, really bothersome. I can start naming people. David Colley, who went from walking to a wheelchair in less than 30 seconds when police rolled up on him looking for someone 6 foot with a fro, and he's 5'5" with a fade, you know, and immediately jumped out of the car and shot him. Now he's been paralyzed and in a depressed state. My brother who had his arm shot, Gregory Adams. You know, the city of Fort Worth has been horrendous in taking care and righting the wrongs that police officers have done, and it's really a frustrating matter. And I'm not trying to take up too much time. I want to give other people an opportunity to chime in, but I'm actually looking at a way based on the police department's own data. I'm trying to figure out a way to see if we can actually form a class action civil rights lawsuit, a class action civil rights violation lawsuit based on the city of Fort Worth's data. And I've discussed that data here with you before. With respect to how they over-police people of color, at least for the past 20 years, using their own data. And we're going to try to use their own data to basically file the suit, make them have to litigate it, and then see if we can actually get them in court and make them dance a little bit and start cutting checks.
Wow. You know, it almost seems sometimes black and white. And it's funny, Bob Willoughby and I have had this conversation, and Bob, you're on the line. And Bob said to me, and I believe he sees it his way because he's never walked in our shoes. But Bob said to me, and Bob, you may remember this conversation, he said, but Terry, when the police stop them, why don't they just comply? And it probably seems like, in you know, from somebody from a distance, that's just what the case is. So, Bob, a lot of times, is that the way you see these shootings, that the people are just not complying when the police stop them?
Well, I see a combination of things, you know, a lack of, I guess, education maybe, you know, mm-hmm. and of how to deal with this. And the police need education. So I just see a lack of communication, and that's why, if you don't mind me plugging my show for tomorrow night, I'm going to do a local voter education every Sunday night at 8 o'clock, and I'm going to hammer for Chief Neil Noakes to come on so that y'all can mm-hmm. ask him questions. I have a couple of questions I'd like to ask. If they don't talk to us, I don't think we can get anywhere. I think the first step starts with talking, okay? Mm-hmm. And then and this shows like your show and the friends just speaking just before me. It's very educating. I'm learning a lot from your show, so I appreciate you having mm-hmm. this. That, but I want to hammer, that's my first thing is to hammer Neil to come on this show. And then also, everybody's hammering on the police. Don't forget, code compliance. Why should they always get a free pass? Right now there's a lawyer, Tanya Carter, called me, and I got a hold of the guy that they took his horses, and I talked to him the other day. And Code Compliant took four of his horses, and it's kind of a funny thing, but that case has been settled, but he still has done wrong, and he lost three horses. There's another case open right now with them taking horses, and that guy has a lawyer. So the last time I talked to this guy yesterday, I said, well, get a hold of that guy with a lawyer. Tell him I have cases and open cases, and maybe we can do like your caller said earlier. I don't know if you can or not, but can you do a Class A section suit against code compliance? Is that possible? So I'll yield back here. I want to hear some more, and I do appreciate you having this show tonight. It's very educational. Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you. Elizabeth, we've seen you go down to city council many, many, many times. If y'all don't know who Elizabeth is, y'all just are not watching the city council meeting. And, Elizabeth, I've seen you go down after the Tatiana Jefferson shooting time and time again to talk about the difference, you know, what people are experiencing with in reference to police shootings. How do you feel? Do you feel like being a Caucasian person, you can really relate to how it is when black people have to deal with police and all the police shootings? Do you feel like white people can really relate?
You know, I really don't think I will ever fully understand how it is to be someone who's not me. But I have a very colorful background, and I have been a person that is on the wrong end of encounters with the police in my past, and I do know what it is like to be physically intimidated by a person in uniform who's a lot larger than you. I know what it's like to feel like there's a chance that you're going to die over a Class B misdemeanor. I do relate to that, but the thing that's different about me, okay, I am Caucasian. I do have that privilege. And when I turned my life around, I get treated differently. And I see that, and I know I get treated differently. And when I look at situations in my past, you know, geez, oh, you know, so-and-so, they were walking down the street happy, and then all of a sudden, bam, we didn't see them for 4 years. Over nothing. And, you know, I would like to think that it's just because I'm so clever and good looking, but I really do think that there's something about me having a privilege because of my race. I'm going through a thing right now that started a week ago. I lost all my identification. I mean, I lost my Social Security card, my birth certificate, my Costco membership, you name it, everything, okay? And it just really has got me to thinking back to the day. And, you know, like, for instance, I know that I'm going to be okay. If I get pulled over, they'll pull up and see that I'm insured and that I'm not wanted for anything. And I'm going to get every chance in the world to drive my cute little self home in my car. But that has more to do with, I think, me having white privilege than to do with me driving a nice car because I don't, or wearing expensive clothes because I don't, you know. I think that right now in Fort Worth, with these runoffs coming up, we're at a place mm-hmm. where we could really change things and we could really do something about all the aspects of our city and our city government and our police department. And I'm just really hoping and praying that that everybody is going to get out and participate and vote and let it be known that people are tired of this difference, of this disparity, you know? It's just not a pretty look. It's not a pretty look. You know, when the first time I ever spoke at city council was about something that the police were doing that really bothered me. You know, they had these little things where they come to your neighborhood and they educate you, and you all meet at either like a school cafeteria or, you know, the rec center or whatever, and they come and tell you, you know, how nice your neighborhood police officer is and how we can all do this and that and we can keep everybody from whatever and blah, blah. Well, they had coloring books for the children. And the way that the children were portrayed, now, of course, there's no nothing's colored in. For one thing, they didn't even give you a dang brown Crayola to color with. And for another thing, people with a certain kind of hairstyle seem to be on the wrong end of all the conversations in that coloring book. And it just made me really angry that it was that blatant and that they're starting it with materials that they're giving to little children, that maybe they can't understand the conversation that's going on, but they see that coloring book and they're coloring that story. And that just, oh, it just infuriates me.
Wow. You know, it's funny she's talking about being pulled over by the police. I saw something online this week, and it showed the difference between a white male being stopped by police and the difference between a black male being stopped by police. And in the little cartoon, it showed the white man, as the police were pulling him over, he's looking in his rearview mirror, and he's saying to himself, oh, my God, now my car insurance is going to go up. That was his concern, that all mm-hmm. that was going to happen mm-hmm. in this encounter was the possibility that his car insurance was going to go up. While the black man mm-hmm. in the cartoon, looking in the rearview mirror, seeing the police, was thinking to himself, I hope I make it home tonight. So that's the mm-hmm. difference, y'all, in the way sometimes it you hate to say it's black and white, but it is in so many ways, where a lot of times when black people see police, we think one thing, and when white people see police, they think something else. You know, which is pretty sad. But according to the ACLU, y'all, in January, okay, somebody's got some noise in their background.
Why don't you see if you can mute me or whatever. Go ahead, mute me out if you got me on. Make
okay,
sure it's
just
not me.
Mute. Is it your phone? It's whatever it is.
Who are you addressing, Carrie?
I don't know. I'm just saying, I'm trying to isolate where the noise was coming from. I don't hear it right now. It stopped. But, y'all, according to the ACLU, from January 2015 to June 30th, 2020, police shot and killed 5,442 people. So that's from January 2015 to June 30th, 2020, 5,442 people. And then we found out that, according to the ACLU as well, that in 2020 alone, there were 1,021 fatal shootings. And in 2019, there was 999. Now, in my opinion, one life is too many. But when the numbers keep looking like this, to me it says that to not address it is a crime within itself. Because it's just a matter of time, it seems like, that there's going to be another hashtag and another hashtag and another hashtag. So how do we, Attorney Reed, open up the conversation and make them talk to us about police reform?
Well, one thing that has to take place is, just as you said and just as the other gentleman said, there has to be communication. And as I've told people, these conversations aren't always going to be pleasant. And sometimes when you go to therapy for a loved one, things can get intense and emotional if both parties are being real and being open about what's taking place. But generally speaking, the entity that has the power or the majority of the power in the relationship has to be the entity that has the most humility when it comes to trying to actually reach a solution. And I want to just say this, Carrie, if I can, because when I go and I speak to different churches, different youth groups, different organizations, when I tell parents who are afraid about the type of contacts, you know, that their children may encounter with police and everything, my main thing that I tell those parents is tell your kids get home alive. And that is the ultimate goal. Get home alive. Don't argue with the police on the street. By law, you're designed to lose in an argument with a police officer on the street. Your goal, get home alive. Don't start talking about I know my rights. There are 9 Supreme Court justices, and they hardly ever agree 9-0, you know, and they don't always agree on what your rights are. But get home alive and then go through the complaint process, because the complaint process is vastly underutilized, and it sets up the lawsuits. Because when you start getting so many complaints, don't phone in your complaints. Your complaints must be written and signed. And a lot of the police officer associations are also making additional requirements, because they're opting out of Chapter 143 of the local government code and going with collective bargaining agreements in lieu of those. And most citizens don't know what's in those collective bargaining agreements. But you have to be mindful of the complaint process with your local police department and file the complaints. Because when one officer starts getting a track record of numerous complaints and then that officer ends up killing someone, now you're pigeonholing the city into having to, you know, get closer to cutting that check, because they've been put on notice by that officer's conduct and the previous complaints that have been filed. So get home alive. Always, always, always file the complaint. And don't, you know, if police officers call you, hey, we can come out. No, we don't need to do that. You don't need to call the police. You can write your complaint in, sign it, mail it in, and just, you know, again, depending on your municipality. But that's one place to start. But really, as far as real reform, it has to start at the council member, mayor level at any particular city. Talking to a street cop really isn't going to get you any closer to any type of police reform. Now, you may be able to reach that one individual officer, but that one individual officer may only form that relationship with you. You understand? He may see, well, that's Leon. I've talked to Leon, or that's Frank. I know Frank. But as soon as he turns the corner and encounters someone he doesn't know, well, then it's right back to how he or she was trained. And so we really have to start forcing the council to pay more attention to how police departments police its citizens. And any police chief, and I know many, and I've spoken to several, they'll tell you, and it's even written in the Fort Worth Police Department general orders, we police at the will of the people. There are always more people than there are police officers. And if people get to the point where when they see red and blues and they decide, I can't trust this person, I'm not pulling over until I get someplace safe, even when it comes to our service members who are getting maced for pulling someplace safe, even though it says on page 68 of the Texas Driver Handbook, if you feel unsafe when you see red and blues light up, you know, slow down, put your hazard lights on, and, you know, let them know, I know you're there, I'm going to pull up here to someplace, and you still, even as a service member, get pepper sprayed and treated badly, you know, then there is a problem in the culture, and we have to empower the good cops to be able to speak up. And I, again, I'm not trying to, and just cut me off, but, for example, when we get these dog and pony show police reform efforts, such as, well, we're going to ban chokeholds in the George Floyd Act. Well, George Floyd wasn't even killed by a chokehold, okay? He was killed because his breath was impeded. So instead of, you know, pointing and putting your chest out in your manual, you know, hey, our general orders say we don't do chokeholds. Well, stop playing games and say we don't use techniques that impede people's breath. Because if you do that as a civilian, you impede a family member's breath, you're going to be facing a third-degree felony. That's what the law is. Also, I said, well, we have a duty to intervene. Look, it's written in our general orders. We have a duty to intervene. Well, what good is your duty to intervene if it's not coupled with a duty to report? Because I don't want Officer Bob saying, man, I had to intervene 6 times with Scotty last week. Well, I want that officer to have been reported the very first time. When you couple it with a duty, an obligation to report your intervention, then you're helping that cop who's trying to do the job the right way, because now he has an obligation to report it, and it takes the stigma off of that officer within the department. He's not a snitch anymore. You understand what I'm saying? Because they don't want to be outcast or seen as snitches and not get the type of support on a real police matter that may require backup and fellow officers or slow poke the aid to them because, you know, they told it or something. So we want to get to the point where we have real reform efforts that actually have teeth, actually have meaning, and only then will we truly be able to start taking real steps down the road and get beyond just the lips moving and the empty promises.
You know, one thing I think is that we really got to pay attention to the things that they ask us to do versus the things that they don't do themselves. You know, they're quick to tell people if you want to get crime out of your community, you know, you need to tell us what's going on. But at the same time, they can see bad behavior from other officers, and they refuse to snitch on each other. You know, they tell us we need to have car insurance if we're driving out here in the street just in case we hit somebody, but they don't carry insurance on themselves when they accidentally shoot somebody. So there's things that I think they should be doing.
Absolutely, and there's been of ideas put forth that, hey, the POAs should be the ones cutting the checks. You know, in addition to suing the cities, sue the POAs, you know, and when the POAs start having to cut checks, then maybe the POAs will be the entities that say, hey, guys, we need to fix some stuff that's going on because we're going broke paying out lawsuits. You understand? So there are a litany of different ideas that are feasible. We're not saying that anybody here has the magic answer. Again, I've stated that there's not one thing. We have to attack this from several different angles. But you never know where the next best idea is going to come from unless you keep asking questions, because questions lead to answers.
You know, in my opinion, and I agree 100%, I think so. We got to – and Chief Noakes, I don't know you, but everybody says you're a really nice guy, and I hope that is the case. I think we got to draw the chief out of the office and into the community where we can talk to him one-on-one, where people can feel comfortable talking to the chief about concerns that they may have about things that are going on in their community. I think I've even invited the chief to come on and do a quarterly show with us here on Let's Talk Fort Worth, because I think a lot of times people are never going to go to the police department. And in a lot of cases, they just don't even trust the process, period. But if they were able to call into a show and talk anonymously about, you know, something that may have occurred to them, that they were feeling like their rights were violated, I think we got to have a situation in which we make sure that he is hearing what's going on, because I think there's a lot of middle people. I myself have gone to internal affairs before, and I really just don't even believe that police, investigating police, is something that even really works. I mean, because it seems like their main objective was just to make certain that they heard the whole story so they could flip the story to make it seem like, well, you know, they didn't do anything wrong, so therefore, you know, we're just going to dismiss your claim altogether. And so I just think it's really not even a smart thing for us to be looking at police investigating other officers. It's just a lot of room for mishandling of things in that particular scenario, if you ask me. Would you agree, Elizabeth?
And that's why – I'm sorry,
go ahead.
Well, that's why you have so many pushes for citizen oversight committees, and that's why you have really a big push, and it still should be a big push, to have the city of Fort Worth come under a consent decree. And I believe that the data is there to support both a citizens review board and a consent decree to address the matters that you just brought forth, because what you just said was echoed by the police reform experts' interim report that was put out July 31st of 2020, and how they talked about with internal affairs that the left hand often didn't know what the right hand was doing, and it was basically dysfunctional. That's in the report that the city paid some people to go and do. And, you know, we could have told them that for free.
Wow. Wow. It's so much I don't understand about the way police departments work, because I just see that if you are supposed to be providing, you know, a service to the community where you are supposed to be protecting and serving, then it absolutely makes no sense that we the people are afraid of the same people that are supposed to be protecting and serving us. That just should never be the case. And that is just, I mean, remember after Tatiana Jefferson, people repeatedly went down to the police department and said, we don't feel safe. And I don't know how loud you need to say that to the mayor or the council for them to understand that that should not be the case. And so, Elizabeth, you were down there week after week as people were saying that. What was that like, you know, to be in council and people one after another, and the lines are out the building right after that, and people are saying they didn't feel safe by the same police department that's supposed to be protecting and serving them?
It was really, there were a lot of things about that were real pitiful to me. It was so ironic that we're all down there basically just sending a message that, hey, we don't feel safe. And we're in a physical space where the whole room, and I got to talk to the mayor about this too. That's one thing that came out of this. That whole room is designed so that if you are speaking at that microphone, you feel intimidated. And they've got, I mean, a Mr. Universe-sized guy in a police uniform standing right there. You know, they kill your microphone, and then in a few seconds, here they come all zooming on you. It's just, it's really ironic, and it's really sad. And, yeah, the fact that I'm paying a ridiculous amount in property taxes, sale taxes, so that I can fund this kind of behavior, just, it really infuriates me. It really does. And I wish that everybody would look at it that way, maybe. Maybe people in my neighborhood might look at it differently. It's like, okay, dude, you're paying for this. You're paying a lot of money for this. What do you think of that, you know? It was just very humbling because, you know, I mean, it you can look at it as humiliating, but I choose to see it as humbling. It's like, you know, I'm just one of many people that all I am is just a citizen of this town. I'm not any better or worse than anybody else. And, man, and to see people disrespected too by the council, by the mayor, by the police that were up there, you know, acting as security, they were very disrespectful to the citizens there.
Wow. So. Bob, you were there as well. When Pastor Rodney McIntosh went up there and said, I've been to prison, I've been in gangs here in Fort Worth, but I'm more afraid of the Fort Worth police than I was when I was out there in the street and I was in prison. What was that like?
Well, well, I don't know. I was more prepared to answer some of these things was on there than to take. You know what? It's like she covered it real well. They're disrespectful, and the attorney there too. And the whole key thing is, if you get, I'm not so in favor of an oversight board right now, a police oversight board. I don't think we need one. If you have, providing, you get in, and I don't think we got one now coming in either right now, but what you need is a real city manager and a real mayor. They are the oversight board. They have the power. if the manager's doing his job right, Brandon Bennett would not be working as director of code compliance right now. He'd be fired with the tapes I have and stuff, okay? He wouldn't be the director, but there's no discipline to anybody in the city. So the heart of it is the manager and the mayor. When you get those two, like Matthew's 12, verse 33, you know, if the tree is good, it bears good fruit, and if the tree is corrupt, it bears corrupt fruit. And there's corrupt. This city is a cesspool of corruption. I mean, it goes to the neighborhood associations. It goes to the school board. It goes all through us here. But the thing about it is they put things in place to protect them, ordinances. They have attorneys that we pay for. They use to protect themselves against us. That's nice. But here's something that we can do. It came to me not too long ago, and I got thinking about it, and I don't know how we can do it or not, but if we can get enough people to rally on this one thing, it'll help everybody, I believe, so much. I don't know if anybody sees this or not, because it's such an easy thing. It's such a simple thing. It's such a small thing. But it is a major thing, and it won't cost a taxpayer a penny. And I'm going to be yelling this over and over. Move the citizen's presentation from the bottom to the top. We are the people. And she's right. They look down on you, and I'd like to see how the new city hall is coming. Now, Dallas has theirs in a horseshoe. They have the people up looking down at least. And but anyway, move the citizen's presentation to the top. It won't cost nothing, to the top of the agenda. Now, White Settlement does that. Forest Hill is at the top. Kennedale is at the top. And I got to say, is the citizens of Fort Worth any less important than those citizens? And just because we're a larger city? And another thing is, if that's at the top and they're not doing anything, or if they're having a problem, and they come down with 150 people or 50 people at the top, well, they don't want that for sure. This would be a hard fight to do, but a simple one. But I think that would help a lot right there. And, yeah, I mean, I've been down to so many cases. I know, I'll back off and take some – here's some – anyway, thank you, Carrie.
Well,
I'm going to
yell out here. How would moving the police presentation – I mean, I'm sorry, police presentation.
That's what it is.
How would moving the citizens' presentation to the top of the agenda on city council night change anything as far as police reform is concerned? Unless you're going to talk to Jay Choppa, who's the top cop in town, I don't know how moving the presentation is going to change anything.
I'll tell you how. Simply, any problem you have with any police officer, anybody in the city, at least when you go down there complying, everybody hears you, everybody sees you on Spectrum TV just watching. Now, they put us at the bottom and said all those zoning cases and all that's been heard, and people have tuned out. After they've seen their case, they're gone. They don't know any of this stuff. Plus, if you can make the pastor stay there, because they go in and out, and I'm not pleased with that either. They need to see what's going on and start really condemning this stuff. Because, you know, I go back to code compliance a lot because I think it's all tied together. Your city manager's over all these things, okay? So that's what I'm saying. That's why I keep going back to it. They're not bad in one department. They're bad in several departments, several.
Mm-hmm.
And I've asked for a simple thing that they would write in some kind of rules that code compliance officers do not have the privilege to lie. And there is no repercussions. I met with David Cook.
Code compliance does not fall under police reform. I know you love to get code compliance, but they don't fall under police, do they?
No, they don't fall under police. This is a second, but what it falls back to the city manager. If he doesn't control one department, he doesn't control other departments, fix the manager first and then go out from there. Manager, and no matter what we do, in other words, get to the cancer. Manager and mayor, that's it. Move the citizen's presentation up top, and we'll have some power. And tell you, what would it hurt to move us up on top? Why would that hurt?
Okay.
Why do we got to sit there 2 hours and wait for everybody to do their thing, and developers are down there making money? We got to wait for them to get through before we get to speak. We should be on top. We should be able to go in and go home. So that's what I'm saying. What would it hurt?
I probably wouldn't.
Okay.
One thing we keep hearing, you know, and I said this on a previous show, is when you bring up the term defund the police, what you get is everybody seems to have a different definition for what that really means. And I think it's been a term that has been skewed to make people appear that if they use the term defund the police, that they are somehow anti-police. And I don't think from the people that I talk to about defund the police, that does not mean making sure we don't have police on the street, because I think the average halfway intelligent person understands that we need police. But at the same time, Attorney Reed, one thing I've noticed is they use that term to try to make anybody who brings it up appear to be someone who's anti-police. Defunding the police does not mean getting rid of police to you, does it?
No. No, it doesn't. And it is a political buzzword that yes, is being used to further divide. Look, any entity, any organization, any relationship, when there are efforts to make it better, that's not a bad thing. And mm-hmm. we don't elect city leaders to go in and say, hey, here's the money, y'all do what y'all want with it. Part of the responsibility mm-hmm. of a city leader, of a council member, of a mayor, is budgeting. Mm-hmm. And when you do your budgets and you look and you see, hey, this money can be better used over here. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're your local Girl Scout chapter, a local church, whatever the organization is, you know, you look over your budget and you review it, and if you see that money needs to be moved around, you do it. And so if there are funds that the police aren't using, and you'll hear police officers tell you, you know, we can't be everything. We can't be the dog catcher. We can't be the mental health ward. We can't be. And so, yeah, take money if you have to, reallocate it. But as the population continues to grow, we're going to need more police, but we're going to need the best trained police that this city and state can offer us without question, without exception. And so to reform means to make better. And that's what we're talking about tonight. How can we make policing better? This is not anti-police. This is not, you know, police don't matter. You know, this is a common sense grown folk conversation about how can we make policing better in these United States, the state of Texas, and in particular tonight, the city of Fort Worth.
Great. You know, a lot of times people have taken the term Black Lives Matter, and I don't refer to the movement. I'm saying that the term Black Lives Matter. And they've, you know, then made it about Black Lives Matter versus Blue Lives Matter. And I saw someone post something on social media the other day that made so much sense. They said Blue Lives is not this is not equivalent to Black Lives Matter, because blue lives are careers, whereas black lives are humans, you know. And so I think a lot of times everything seems to be pitting, you know, people against the police. And I think that's where the first problem starts. That, like you said earlier, Attorney Reed, it's not about us versus them. It's about figuring out how to fix this thing, because at the rate that they're killing people, it's got to be some accountability. I mean, and the city, a taxpayer should not keep being responsible for paying out, even though in situations, there's certain situations here in Fort Worth where there should have been some payout. But even with that, it's not supposed to be the taxpayer that's responsible. The police officer needs to be carrying insurance so they can pay out of their own insurance. And if they get enough demerits against their insurance, then, of course, more than likely they won't be insured. Therefore, they won't be able to be police officers anymore. So I think, again, like you said earlier, Attorney Reed, it needs to be some accountability. I think because when the accountability comes in and people start looking at losing their jobs, losing their insurance, not being able to take care of their families, you know, a bad profile following them everywhere they go. And I think that's another thing. There should be a list of officers and their track record. And if they shot two or three people and killed, you agree with that?
Yes, the database. In speaking with different police chiefs, and these are police chiefs, these are terms that I'm learning from police chiefs, and I'm going to talk to you real quick about two of them, zombie cops and gypsy cops. Okay, zombie cops are cops that a sheriff, or not a sheriff, but the chief, whoever the sheriff, if they determine, hey, this officer has tarnished the uniform, shouldn't be wearing the uniform, I'm firing you. Okay, well, now that officer doesn't get fired. The officer goes to arbitration, And the arbiter, because the arbiter wants to keep getting jobs and keep getting called upon, the arbiter, you know, will only suspend them or something, or, you know, or take 2 week pay away and allow that person to come right back to work. Okay, well, and now that person's smiling in the face of the chief tried to get rid of that person, but because of the police officer associations and arbitration and all of that, the sheriff or the police chief wasn't able to, and they said they call those people zombie cops, and we just can't get rid of them. Gypsy cops refers to the people that you're talking about. You get in trouble. Oh, before you get brought, you know, held accountable, you resign to keep your position and your peace officer license, and you just move to a small town for a few years, and then, you know, you reappear somewhere else in a larger municipality. But you just keep moving around from place to place, wreaking havoc. And in those instances, if you're one of those cities who hires one of those gypsy cops, you should have a higher level of accountability should that cop do something wrong, because their track record and their history is following them, and you're assuming the risk of that police officer's conduct. And so, yes, it comes back to accountability. And I just want to say this. There are some people who actually do believe that police departments should be abolished. I don't think that's feasible. I've seen some of the ways that they've talked about doing it, but I don't, and I'm not disparaging it one way or the other. I don't see, as an attorney, how it would work with all of the constitutional concerns and when we have incidents that should require trained professionals to come out and handle it. But there are some people who really believe no, defund means abolished. I'm not in that camp, but there are people who believe that, and I'm not in that camp. I don't believe it, and I don't think it's feasible. But you know, it is a thought process.
You know, I've heard people talk about that, and I think it's irresponsible, in my opinion, unless you have a blueprint already laid out for how you're going to police the community. And I don't mean just in thought process, oh, you know, what we can do is we can police it ourselves. I think you need to have a blueprint of how you're going to finance it, how you're, you know, who you're going to employ, you know, all of that, how you're going to insure them, the whole nine yards, before you even, you know, talk about completely getting rid of police. So I think that's not even a logical train of thought, in my opinion, because I think we need police, but we need to define what type of police we need. We don't want road cops on the street. We don't want officers who are trigger happy. We don't want officers who go to a scene and they don't determine or assess the scene properly before they start shooting. We saw over in Mesquite this week that from what I see or what I've seen on the video, he wasn't close enough to them to pose a threat. Both of them were carrying tasers. It would have been very easy for them to taser him rather than to both shoot him. So I just think, you know, there's a whole lot going on, and I'm not sure if it's about training, because, you know, someone made the point once that if it were just about training, black officers would be shooting people at the same rate that white officers are shooting people. So it cannot be just about the training, because you can't isolate it to the training if it's not happening with black officers like it is happening with white officers. Would y'all agree with that? I guess nobody agrees with that.
I was trying. One of the things that we did right off the bat as a defense attorney, if you're a defense attorney, you're familiar with something that's called a TRAS, which is the Texas Risk Assessment score or scale. And what that is, if you get put on probation or if a judge is going to sentence you, they'll basically have you do this risk assessment. This risk assessment tool gives some indication as to how you are going to be as a probationer, and whether you need whether you're high risk, low risk, medium risk, what particular types of supervision levels you may need. And one of the things that I did right off the bat, I'm okay, if it's good enough to identify, you know, the needs of people who are in the criminal justice system, why can't we identify people who would have those same traits on the front end in the recruiting process? So I reached out to the actual professors who actually came up with the study and designed the study. The TRAS was based off the ORAS, which came out of Ohio. The University of Cincinnati has one of the nation's leading criminal justice departments, and I got them on the phone, and they're like, yeah, we would love to do that. We've been doing some work in that field, but to come up with assessment tools to better identify candidates who may have certain flags that wouldn't make them the best type of police officers. You know, we have to go beyond, you know, just whosoever shall, let him come. You know, it's multi-pronged, it's multifaceted, and we have to really have a serious talk as Americans, as Texans, as residents of Fort Worth on what we want policing to look like, and we should have a say in it because police only are allowed to police at the will of the people. They realize that, but there hasn't been enough pushback for the city to change its positions. And I'm sorry, I gotta go. I had another engagement. I hope I've brought something to the conversation that would at least tickle someone's mind. And anything I say, as I tell you, and I'll tell anyone who's listening, anything I tell you, I can show you. And so I'd love to, if anybody wants, I have the since 2002 when racial profiling reports were required and mandated by the state, I have every one from the city of Fort Worth. I have their use of force reports, you know, and I have the police reform expert report. Because again, one of the things that I like to do as a lawyer, I don't like to just tell, I like to show. And so when I show you something and I let you read it at your own pace, then you'll see Leon wasn't just making this up, and we have a real problem, and grown folk need to be grown, sit down, recognize it, put pride aside, and say, how can we reach common sense solutions so that we have the best trained police officers we can afford, and a citizenry that respects the police officers and their roles. And with that, I have to bow out of the conversation. I'll try to continue to listen, and if not, I'll come back and I'll listen to the remainder of it offline at a different time.
Leon, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Yeah,
bless
thank you.
Bless
so
everybody
much.
Here. Keep working, keep calling in, and keep having these type of discussions, y'all.
Thank you. You know, and I want to be clear, because I do not want any more clamp back on me, because I've been clucked upside the head by 4-1-PD, and I don't mean physically clucked upside the head, let me be clear. But they have harassed me on an extended term for longer than I am longer than I'm even comfortable with telling y'all the extent of the harassment. So when I talk about police reform, it's because I know it's needed. If I were taking this secondhand, you know, from somebody else's experience, I would say, okay, well, maybe. But I know myself that there are bad apples that need to be removed from the barrel. And so police reform, I think, in my opinion, would do that. And I think anytime people cannot sit down and talk about what's wrong with the police without being harassed, then there's something wrong with the police. I mean, we really should live in a community where the police want to get along with the people and the people want to get along with the police. It shouldn't be the people versus the police. And I think that's where we've been for far too long. We have found ourselves in a situation where we're being pitted against each other. And I'm not sure where it began, but I'm praying that hopefully with police reform it will end. Because at the end of the day, I think if the people are always going to outnumber the police, at some point the police will need the people and not just the other way around. And so I think that's where we are. It's so much division. That so many people now, especially in the black community, say, calling the police is your absolute last resort. And in some cases, they say don't even call the police. And that's a scary place to be, where people have decided that they got to take their matters into their own hands, because they feel like if they call the police, even though they may be the person in trouble, just as what we saw up in Columbus, Ohio, on the day in which George Floyd's verdict was being read, or the verdict for the George Floyd trial, I guess I should say, that's when a young girl, 14 years old, calls police because an adult and her daughter are outside her house. Okay, somebody's got some noise in their background. And so the young 14-year-old calls police because she is concerned for her safety. At some point, she goes into the house. She gets a knife, and she feels the need to protect herself, which I don't know if a lot of you all understand what Stand Your Ground is. Stand Your Ground is a law that says that you have the ability, if you're in your own home, to protect your home and your property. And in Columbus, Ohio, or in the state of Ohio, they have also added to that, you don't have a duty to retreat. That meaning you don't have to run. A lot of states will say if you have the ability to run, do so in order not to have to take a life. But in Ohio, that's not even the case. And that young girl was defending herself, and police drove up, did not, in my opinion, properly assess the scene, and she was the one that was killed because she had the knife, even though she was the person who called police. So I think we're seeing a situation far too often where the police are driving up and they're not properly assessing the scene, like in the situation with Tamir Rice. Tamir Rice had a toy gun in his hand, but had police asked him to put the gun down or talk to him before they just shot him, they would have determined that it was a toy gun and it wasn't a gun that was real. And so in so many of these situations, I really want to say it's about training, but I really don't know that it's about training. I think it's about if you're going to a neighborhood and you're afraid when you go, then you really shouldn't be working there, or you should be put in another part of town, or you shouldn't be on the police force. But you should not be policing where you're afraid. I just think that's a no-no. If I were a black officer, let's just say, and it was a part of the city in which they said, don't be caught over there after dark because they kill black people, I would ask not to be assigned over there, because I would say, listen, even though I'm a police officer, it's known on the streets that if you're a black person and you're caught over there after dark, it's a possibility that they would kill you. So if I was afraid, I would even say that, or I'd seek another occupation. So do y'all see that being the case, that maybe some of these officers are afraid of the areas in which they're working, and so therefore they are, I don't want to use the term trigger happy, but more apt to shoot before they could properly assess the scene?
Well, I think what I understand, we're understaffed quite a bit, so it doesn't give them time to get trained. And yeah, I would say I agree with you. They are scared in more areas than there are other areas. But you know, when you're understaffed, you don't have enough help, and that, I guess it could make. I don't know. I think we need to know more about what's going on the other side of the coin. We need to know more. How are we understaffed? That's why it's so important to get Chief Neil Noakes to come on one of our shows, or to someone, to start talking, so that we can start going from there and start learning the other side, and then we can look and see, and if he's telling us the truth or what, and sound him out and see. Because if he doesn't speak, that's where we're at right now. You know what I mean? That's the number one thing. If he doesn't, then, you know, that's the first thing we should be focusing on. And then see, if I have my citizen presentation at the top, everybody hear me complain about that. But at the bottom, no one hears me complain about it. That's why it's so important, Terry. Go ahead. I'm sorry. You can mute me back out, too, if I'm making that noise. It might be because I got this Spectrum phone. There's nothing on here, but that's probably my phone. Mute me out while you're going. You can come mute me in and out, okay?
Okay. We're going to go to 310927. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth. 310927. Good evening. We're going to the phone line, 310927. Good evening.
I'm sorry. My phone was on mute.
Okay.
Can you hear
good
me?
Evening. We can.
Okay, so I'm from the Fort Worth area. I have a nonprofit organization called Build a Better Hood. We deal with a lot of conflict resolution, violence de-escalation. One of the individuals who started the first Texas-based Crip Set in Fort Worth. So in my former life before I started to get into community activism, we formed the Gang Truce in 1994, which reduced crime in Tarrant County over 48%. The reason why I'm interjecting to the conversation is I proposed to Keith Fitzgerald a few years back before he was removed from office. One of the ways that you can build a better community relations between the police and the community is that maybe these officers should come out in plain clothes, have a picnic, park, whatever, basketball games, dominoes, bring your kids out to be a part and meet the kids in the neighborhood. Sit down. I mean, we're still going to have active police officers patrolling the area. I'm not saying every police officer, come out and do so. But if you're going to patrol in a particular community, you should be willing to want to have some type of relationship with the people in the community in the first place. 20 years ago, I would have, I had a totally different perspective when it came to dealing with police. And so, I'm more of an advocate now that people off inside our own neighborhoods, we need to start sending our children to be more civil servants, because only the only people who are going to have an incentive to have a respect for the people from the community are people from the community in the first place. And so if we don't start doing things that that build relations up, and I'm saying this by example, there was a Luther Perry was one of the officers off inside Fort Worth there when I was younger. The way in which he treated us when we were young is what earned him respect with people in the streets. You know, he would pull us over and say, "Hey, man, you got a warrant. I don't want to, I don't want to, trip with you and things of the such. I'm going to follow you to your house so you can go on inside the house, kiss your girl, do whatever you got to do. But, man, please don't make me chase you." Because he treated us like humans in the neighborhood, we made other individuals in the neighborhood respect him. And so there has to be some better relations between, most of the voices that the people are overlooking is, it's like one of the things that we do with Build a Better Hood. We try to be a voice for the voiceless. But I think that we need to start presenting some things that are going to be more effective, based on action and not so many words. And that's all I want to say.
Should we be drawing a blueprint? I mean, seriously, I hate to say it like that, and say this is what we feel needs to be happening because for some reason what needs to be happening is not happening. So should we be presenting to the police chief or Jay Chopper, who's the top cop here, what we feel should be going on and making some demands that some changes take place?
Who are you addressing, Perry?
I was talking to the caller.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
I mean, I do feel, my thing is, what we try to do is deal with the children who are considered to be the ones no one wants to deal with, people who are returning from the system, that find themselves falling back into the same lifestyle. And I'm saying this, I've been shot 6 times, 5 of which was an off-duty police officer. It never went to any, I was 19 years old at the time. But it was a totally different era back then than it is now. And there was a lot of corruption, and I'm not here to just talk about that because we all see corruption. The only thing that it is that now we got telephones with cameras. It's not like it hasn't always been happening. It's just we have the ability to film it now. But from dealing with relations, what I'm saying, dealing with some dudes from, because I deal with a lot of what I call them tribes, but they say gang members or whatever. From dealing with a lot of these individuals who might be misdirected based on what they think they're a part of, I'm speaking from the representation from them of how we lessen the tension, because we always hear about police officers or whatever feeling frightened or scared about particular communities, and we know just as being black people that It don't make no difference what community you're in. You know, you can be riding down a nice neighborhood or a bad neighborhood. When you get pulled over, there's that tension and that feeling that, you know, you might get shot and killed. You might not go home that night. And so what I'm saying is I do believe that we need to be presenting more things. And if there's not a willingness to do that, then that speaks volumes. I mean, why would you want to patrol my neighborhood, but you wouldn't want to come out here and get in regular clothes and meet your community? It's not like there's not going to be police officers on duty. But you have to become, you know, you're going to have to, we have to have some type of cordial, respectful relationship with each other outside of you just walking around with a pistol and a badge for us to have an understanding that me telling my child or my son or my cousin, hey, y'all quit tripping, man, you know, you know, go on and go with the officer. If we don't build up some type of respect, then it's never going to be, you know, it's going to continue to be the same. That's just my opinion.
I agree. I think one thing we're I don't know how we got this far off kilter, but I just think it almost seems like we have allowed a police officer going home at night to be more valuable than everybody going home at night. You know, so
exactly.
If a police officer
exactly.
Yeah. Me in a traffic stop, I want to go home just like he wants to go home. And so it seems
right.
Like some kind of way we're valuing, you know, that the officer, you know, made a mistake or the officer, and y'all listen, let me be clear. I am not picking on police tonight. What I want is to talk about police reform so that these shootings stop, so that people who look like me aren't afraid to see the police and afraid that if they do see the police that they're not going to get home. And so I think we got to have these conversations, and anybody who feels that us having these conversations is not good, you should question the motive of those people, because the police department should really want to know, since they're always talking about community relations, they should want to know how the community feels and how the community feels like these issues can be resolved. Now, that's my thought process. And anybody who says, well, you know, the conversation, we shouldn't be having the conversation. Why shouldn't we? Because they cannot give us a good reason why so many people keep getting shot. Not a good enough reason anyway. They give us reasons, but they don't give us a good enough reason why people with mental illness keep getting shot, people who have their hands up keep getting shot, people who had their backs turned and were getting shot. And I'm not saying this is the case in all of the shootings, but in too many.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think we need to have the discussion. We got to have the discussion, because otherwise we're just going to be Monday morning quarterbacks talking about, oh, there was another police shooting and this is what happened. No, we need to start asking for a seat at the table so we can talk about why is it happening and how we can make it stop. That's my thought on what needs to happen, because I think at the end of the day, one more person becoming a hashtag is way too many. And I think as, you know, year after year flips over and we keep seeing shooting after shooting, and some of them just aren't making any sense. I mean, they're not. And I'm not beating up on police. I mean, I'm not. But I am concerned that police don't have enough and I don't want to use the word training. They're not assessing they're not properly assessing the scene. I mean, caller 310, you saw what happened in Columbus, Ohio. Do you think the officer pulled up on the scene and properly assessed it, or do you think he didn't properly assess it and killed the young girl with the knife? Does caller 310 hear me? Oh God, did I mute you, caller 310?
No, I'm here. I'm sorry.
Okay. So the young girl was 14. Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear the last part.
The 14-year-old in Columbus, Ohio, she was the one that called the police. She was the one that had the problem at her house. It's a stand your ground state. When the police officer pulled up and shot her because she was the one with the knife, did you think he properly assessed the scene, or did he have time to properly assess the scene before he shot her?
Well, I mean, his training automatically shouldn't be on-site shoot, you know, and especially when it's a child. Man,
there's a lot of these shootings that I don't believe that are properly assessed. So, no, I don't believe he properly assessed the situation.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Bob,
he has a knife. Okay. Why did I always resort to the gun first? You know, why not tase a person? Mm-hmm. And then with a child, you can restrain her.
Wow.
It's automatically shoot. You know, when you could disarm a person, you could, you know, and then it's not like you're shooting at the leg or you know, shooting in a spot to just injure somebody. They're shooting to kill.
See, you know what? I heard a police officer address that the other day, and his response was that they don't take shots that are non-lethal when they take a shot, because just in case they miss, then they got to count for every bullet that went out. So when they shoot, they're shooting to kill. And I think that's what
makes so that's the value of the bullet is more than the value of the life.
Wow. Right. What?
Yeah,
that's the way
what I hate to say is that, you know, we are talking, and I think that that's a civil thing to do, but it's going to get to a point where, you know, and I'm not trying to, you know, fear monger or anything to the sex, but, you know, you got a lot of people who are getting fed up and, you know, and might not be vocally speaking about it, but, you know, we're not going to continue to live in fear in our community. We're just not going to continue to live in fear. You know, death is a transition. It's just a part of life. And so some of us don't feel, you know, we've been raised in war zones and terrible zones in the first place, and it's getting to the point to where it's the justification because a person looks a certain way or because a person talks a certain way or because of stereotypes. I understand that, you know, if you're sitting there listening to the boogie bad guy about the rap music, all people who listening to this are violent, whatever, they should have enough sense to be able to discern fact from fiction. You know, if they're officers, they're placed off inside a position of a great authority. They should have the utmost respect for, you know, cultural understanding. There should be more intensive training when it comes. That weapon shouldn't come out the holster unless some immediate danger. And immediate danger means if somebody got a pistol at you or you're in a situation to where you truly fear for your life. How are you going to fear for your life, a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old kid with a knife? I don't need a gun. I don't even have to have a gun to deal with that situation.
That part.
So,
that part right there.
It's hypocrisy, and if we keep letting them say that, you know, the fact of the immunity, and I think that's what this is more addressing. Excuse me, me getting on talking about ways and methods to try to solve it. But if they have immunity, if you remove the immunity from them, and they're liable for what they do, then they won't be doing it so much.
I agree. Now I agree with that. Because see, if everything I did I knew had a consequence, and the consequence was going to be followed through on, I would think twice before I made some decisions in my life. It's kind of like when you get 18, you realize that all the responsibility is on you then as an adult, and you don't get a chance to say, you know, my mother or my father going to answer you. So the same applies, I feel, when you're a police officer, that there should be some consequences attached to that. We're going to go back to the phone lines. We're going to pick up 702-557. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Good evening. This is Dr. Say. Good evening, Carrie.
Good evening. All right. This is
you? Yes, I was just calling to add to the conversation.
Okay.
About what
can you speak up for us just a little bit?
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, that's good. Uh-huh.
Okay. I was calling in to first of all, I just want to tell the audience that I'm a lawyer and a human rights lawyer, and we work with situations like you have here in Fort Worth, and we work with different cities across the country, and we've looked at all of these ways that can be utilized to curtail police violence. And the best way that we have seen is to have the community oversight boards and community policing. The reason why is because there's really no such thing as police reform. And this is not my conclusion. This is the conclusions of the criminal justice professors and people who've been working with different methods to try to curtail police violence. The reason why there's no such way that there is presently to stop police violence is because of the endemic police culture, the us versus them mentality, the militaristic mentality is taught to them in the police academy. And it's fostered through the police culture of the thin blue line. So realistically, the only way to curtail violence is to become the police yourself. So there's some models out there for the community to become the police. And the models come about by the strength of your population and the strength of your vote. And I'm not talking about necessarily in a general election, but by the consensus of the community, by an official ballot, official vote, to vote in community policing. When you have a community policing, we have a model that not only will there be a community civilian police board, but there will also be a way for members of the community to be...
Hold on one second. There's a kickback. Do you have your computer on at the same time? Can you mute the computer?
I don't.
Okay. I don't know. So for some reason, the powers that be don't want you to finish, so we want to hear this. So come closer to the phone then. Or take a speaker, maybe. Okay, there you go.
Am I good now? So the way that this is set up is that the community would vote themselves in as a community police force that would work in conjunction with the police, in your case, Fort Worth Police. So if there's a police shooting or there's something violent happening, the community police force would have radios and cars. So they would be able to be on the scene, so there would be with cameras, and so there won't be any cover-ups. And they would be directly connected to the district attorney's office when there's a police-involved shooting, so there's on-the-spot coverage. This takes out all of the guesswork and the trusting of the police who can't be trusted to have some fairness and some civility to policing. On top of that, there will be a member of the community on the community policing board who will be directly connected to the district attorney's office. So when there's a follow-up for prosecution, all of the reports that the community police had gathered from witnesses at the scene and from their cameras and from the videos that they have would be available to prosecute the police. Because they, of course, every time there's a shooting, they go to this mode of cover-up. So this takes away the cover-up, and this takes away the subject of accountability. Now they are accountable because the community holds them accountable. And we find that this model is the best model to ensure safety, because we have to take the trust out of the police or anybody who's untrustworthy in order to have fairness. So I wanted to share that with me because we have developed in our Human Rights Institute, we developed courses for the community to teach them how to implement a community police force and how to implement a community police board that will be democratic in scope and will be able to have oversight over situations that occur in our community.
Wow. Now, you know what? Mm-hmm. For those of us who live in Fort Worth, I don't see that happening because this city is not one of transparency. So, Mr. James, you're on the phone. I wish you'd chime in on this. But I really don't see – we can't even hear the police scanners here. I mean, they blacked it out, so you can't even hear police scanners. So I cannot see them allowing community members. Well, let Mr. James tell us. Mr. James can tell us better than that. Mr. James was the neighbor that
could, Could I reply to that, Karen?
Sure.
Okay, good. The police won't have any decision-making in that because the power is always – no, they won't have any decisions. If when you go to the polls to vote, go to any of our elections that we set up, it's the power of the community because the community, the civilians, pay the police force. So they in reality, are our servants. So you know, if the people speak and say that they want a board, that's a legislative action that a mere police officer can't, or a judge can't even overturn. Once the people vote to say that we want community policing, and everybody says, yes, we want community policing, and that is the vote, then we take away the police power, or we disperse it to a different model. And that's up to the people. That's not up to the police. They're the defenders. They're the perpetrators. So, no, this is up to the people. So this is a democratic way to do this. And no one can overturn the will of the people because it's legislation. This is like a bill or an act. It's initiative. It's legislation. So even a judge can't overturn this because that's not how
democracy works.
So that's why I wanted to make that clarification of this tool that people we have that we just don't understand the power that people have when they unite and make an official vote to make a change.
Okay. Mr. James, you live here in Fort Worth. How likely is that to happen?
Oh, they say you never say never, but my experience with the Atropiana Jefferson case, it was almost like I was a citizen police because I witnessed the whole ordeal from the time that she was shot to the time that the coroner came and removed her body. So I saw it all. I reported it all. And before the ink was dry on the paper, the narrative of the incident was being changed. It went from a wellness call to an open structure call to a possible burglary call. I mean, the narrative changed several times. I dialed a non-emergency number, you know, and this is what I got. But the subject of your show was police reform. I'd like to, I will get with Chief Notes about the money emergency number and the 911 number being going to the same dispatcher. That needs to be changed. I feel like if someone calls the police, the police should meet with the person that called them to get an assessment of why they called. There were two officers that were on that particular incident, but we only hear about one of them. And it's almost like the police are protecting the police. So I don't trust. I don't trust the police.
That's
Sonny, I'm sorry. Did you hear that?
Yes, I did. And we agree. No one trusts the police. So because of that, we have to put a model in place where we take trust out of the police. The community police force would have radios, which would be tapped into the scanners, so they'll know when an incident occurs because they have been empowered to be police. So because they're police, they have police scanners, they have police cars. All of this is allocated from the city's budget. This is what makes, when you put in legislation, it's allocated from the budget. So the cars, so we have that. And we have maybe in Fort Worth, maybe 5 to 10 cars. Well, when the incident occurs, and they say, well, it occurred on such and such a street, all the community police that's in that area would go to that site with their cameras, with their reports, their pens and pencils to make reports, to question witnesses on the scene, to question officers. on the scene as to what happened. So, and all of this is already legal because it's been voted in. So now these reports, the police can't say, "Oh, we don't want to talk to you." No, we're the police. We're the police, and we've been empowered to take a report from you. And so this report, along with the community police who've taken the report, this goes to the district attorney, because it's up to the district attorney, because he's the chief, really the chief of police. He's the one who tells the police whether or not we're going to charge you or not charge you based upon the evidence. So our community police would be giving evidence of what the witness says, the videos, whatever the videos say. All of this would now be officially in the chain of evidence to be given to the district attorney. Now the district attorney, his only job is to look at the evidence and decide whether or not there's probable cause to charge. So now, because the evidence indicates that, now they would be charged. And there would be evidence preserved by the community police as well as the witnesses were on the scene. So this takes away all of the trust factors that we have to trust what the police said in the police cover-ups. Because it's impossible, I won't say impossible, but it's very difficult to cover up a shooting when there are community observers there taking witnesses, taking snapshots of the scene, and all of that, and giving it to the district attorney so that they can be charged. So
can I chime in on that one?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I just heard what you said, and in fact, I lived the citizen police, even though I wasn't a citizen police. Okay, and we and the DA got all this information that you just described, and she did come back with an indictment, right? Okay, mm-hmm. You mentioned witnesses. I'm a witness, but I'm not going to be able. Well, I'm not going to be a part of the trial. You know, I'm not going to be called as a witness. You know,
why not?
In this trial, so that lets me not even trust the DA at this point.
He asked you, Mr. James, why are you not going to be called as a witness?
No, the DA is not going to call me as a witness. I wouldn't mind. I was geared up to be a witness, but I'm not going to be called as a witness. They don't need me as a witness.
Well, you know, the district attorney, the police, and the judges is the triumvirate of evil that causes our community to be oppressed and in a police state. So I understand that. So if we gave information, if our community police gave information, 1, 2, 3 police, and we had witnesses and video, if that information was given to a district attorney and the district attorney did not do his job, there's devices in law. One of them is called a mandamus, where people go, when any type of public officer does not do his duty, you can demand, you can go to a court and demand that he does his job to do that. And so now that district attorney, we got him in court. And not only in court, we got his job. His job is at stake now, because if you're derelict in your duty and there's a bias that has formed to the extent that we know that you cannot form your job in an unbiased way, then you're removed. So what this does is put an additional layer of protection in case we have a district attorney, can remove district attorneys. The district attorneys have been removed in several cases. They was removed in the Ahmed Arbery case down in Georgia because it was found that the district attorney had hired one of the killers who worked at one time with the sheriff's department.
And they, as you know, they were arrested for several months because of implicit. If you, if a district attorney or a judge just gives the continuous scent of bias, you can have them removed under the Sixth Amendment, which is the right to have a fair trial and everybody to have a fair and unbiased and due process, because it's the Fifth Amendment. You can have, because they'll be violate the process, the due process that occurs, should occur when there's a crime, when there's a crime that has taken place. So now the community is empowered, because now the community is in charge of the police, and that's how it has to be in order for bias to be removed. Now, there are several ways to do this. One way is to hold a three-way. There's one way to hold a citywide initiative with that on the ballot, which allows white folks and everybody to vote to whether or not there's going to be a community policing board. They did that in Memphis and other places, and we have a community policing board as a result. But then there's because we have a special status, and indigenous people are Afro-descendant people, we have a special status which allows us to self-police, to be self, and to make self-determination. Just like if we were Indians, if we were American Indians in Fort Worth, we would have the ability to have our own police, because people who are special minorities have special benefits. So that's the second way, is to assert our Afro-descendant status, which allows us to have our own police. And the other way is a referendum as well, which is sort of like an initiative, which is a citywide, sometimes a statewide vote to whether or not there's going to be community police. But in this case, it would be either the initiative or the Afro-descendant way, which would allow the people to be in charge of the police. And that's really how the law is written. It's the people who are in charge of the police. The district attorneys are usually they run for office, so you select district attorneys, you select judges. And that's the process, comes from the people. The people put judges in power, and they put district attorneys in power. And they can also take them out of power by doing things like recall elections and that sort of thing. So what we have to do, and all of the nation, not just Fort Worth, is to assert our full citizenship rights to actually have power over the officers or the people that we've elected to represent us. We can remove them. So when we assert, when we get to that point of knowledge and being informed that we actually have the power to put in police, take out police, put in district attorneys, take out district attorneys, to put in judges, take out judges, then we will see that we will be better respected. The reason why they don't respect us now, because they're just, as you say, and I've been listening, they're running roughshod because they think they're unaccountable for their acts. But if we can hold them to the standard of democracy, because what I'm talking about is just pure democracy. That's how democracy works. So whoever's voting and becomes the has the power to of office, that's how democracy in cities and states are run. So if we do that, then we can start getting a handle and be more respected and be in the city and start being able to move to the point of even giving up some of the other political benefits that cities have, because now we're aware that we have enough power to assert these rights and to make things happen that we want to happen. So there is a number of ways that we can do this without trusting a policeman or a district attorney, because they are our servants under the law.
Wow. Y'all, we got, did that answer your question, Mr. James?
Kind of, sort of. I still think it's rigged. It's going to take a lot of effort to get something done like that, and we don't really have that much time.
No, it doesn't. And I can tell you how you can do it within 30 to 60 days. I can draw up a ballot amongst all of the people that are affected. After you send your whole community, everybody doesn't even have to go to not even one Caucasian has to cast a vote. And it's a ballot, and it would say basically that we want to remove the authority from the Fort Worth Police Department and replace it with a community policing force and a community board. And people would say yes or no. So when we tally this up at the end of 60 to 90 days, however long that we think that it would take to be going to the churches and places where people can sign, you see people, can you sign this petition, can you sign this initiative? We'll be doing the same process, because that's a democratic process, is when the people sign, give their consent, give directions for the state to go. So once we tally up those votes, now it's time to engage the city council. This is what the people have decided. The people have decided to replace a section of the police to work. This is where this negotiation starts now, because now, since you have the power, and you basically put them out of power, but now you have a situation where you have to have some type of policing, and they have a police force already in place. Now this is when the negotiations with the lawyers start. Well, okay, we want 10 cars, we want radios, equipment, all of that, and we want to configure this so that when any crime scene goes down, that our officers can be at the crime scene, that we can have direct reporting ability directly to the district attorney with the evidence, that we're able to gather evidence, question witnesses, gather evidence, and we have the right to video and take photos of the scene, just like in forensic files, any kind of crime scene that occurs. And we have the right to, and we want to work in conjunction with the present police academy and the police department, so our officers can be trained alongside the regular police force. So now you have it's actually a cooperation, taking out the trust issues, a cooperation between the community police and the Fort Worth police to alleviate crime and to dissect a crime scene and to send evidence to the district attorney for prosecution. So that's how it works. That's how it works. It's going to go into, once you have the power and you get like 50,000, I don't know how many, and for black people in Fort Worth, but once you have the majority of those people to say that they want a different way to do this, taking the trust issues out, and then you have the power for the lawyers to go in there and negotiate with the city council.
Wow. Y'all, listen, I don't know if y'all are familiar with that CCPD money, but that sounds like a good way to implement it in terms of connecting the community with the police. We're going to go back to the phone lines. We're going to pick up 323-385. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Hello there. Hello there, Michelle. How are you?
Good evening.
Well, this is your buddy James here. I don't live in Fort Worth, but I live in Cali, and we have similar problems. We are losing our quote-unquote black community, but for argument's sake, we still have, Compton and Watts. Police reform is the verbiage and the idea sounds good. Y'all forgive me, I'm outside, so. The neighbor is doing something. He's building something like this. Maybe a bunker, something like that. Building a bunker on his house or something. I don't know. Police reform sounds good, but we need to actually rebuild the whole policing system, because we know that in America, policing is the modern day policing is the grandchild of the slave patrols, and these people act like slave patrollers when they come into the quote unquote black community. The only way that you can actually fix this problem is to actually enforce the rules that are on the books, because we as in American citizens look at police like they're special. They are city employees. They are no more important than the janitor that works inside of the police department building. They are city employees. They get paid with city taxes. The only thing is that they are empowered with police, with arrest powers and the powers to use deadly force. I've taken the laws of arrest class. It's not that special. I sat there and watched a video, talked to a teacher and everything, and got a certificate saying I took the class so I could actually apply for a police department job. So it's not like it's that grand, it's some grand, long, drawn-out four-year process. The police, to be held accountable, they need to wear body cameras while on duty. The reason that they don't, that they fight so hard, is because they actually are criminals that are committing crimes and don't want to be seen committing said crimes. Because if you made them do something they don't, anything you tell them that they need to do and they fight you on, obviously is a reason behind it. If police don't want to wear a body camera, it's because they're doing something they're not supposed to be doing. But we allowed this to happen because we allowed the police to police themselves. This is no better than having Al Capone and Lucky Luciano running the police department, and we run to them and say, hey, we got a problem. And they say, okay, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and take care of that, and then they take care of me. So you have a mafia that is answerable to no one but themselves. Even the city councils don't want to do anything about them because they don't want to be seen as not being tough on crime, and it's all because they want to control the black people, because white people are scared if we don't have any police or police don't do what they're doing, then they're going to run up in our houses and kill us all. It's the same thing as the slave patrols. If the slaves get out of control, then, you know, the master's scared that they're going to kill them in their blood. The thinking hasn't changed in over 150 years. So that's one point. The other point real quick is that district attorneys and police have, in my opinion, and the lawyer probably could tell you, that they have an unholy relationship with the courts, because the district attorney needs police to make their cases. So they do not want to prosecute police. They didn't want to prosecute Derek Chauvin and his buddies until it was just too hot to handle, and they just threw it to the attorney general. That's the people who actually need to be prosecuting police when they do misconduct, because the district attorney ain't going to do nothing. It was within policy. It was a good shoot. How do we even know what the policy is? Has anybody even actually gotten a hold of police policing procedure manuals and the training manuals that they get? Because they always tell you that it was within policy, but they never tell you, you never know what the policy is. So we need to have a more transparent idea of what these police are actually trained and what the rules and regulations are that govern them, and then hold them to that. Now, having a whole separate police department entity sounds good, but all that will happen is that you'll have a Crips and Bloods type of situation. You'll have the police that get there to the scene, and then they'll try to keep those people away from the scene. Hey, we are investigating, and then you'll have fighting. So it's you know, because this is my area, you can't do this and this and that. It'll just be a whole entire mess. Just make the police that you have right now either wear a body cam, give them a body cam, say, look, it's going to be on all day except for you go to the bathroom. It's going to be off for 20 minutes, and then it'll come back on. You can't turn it off. You can't turn it on. Somebody other than the department you work in is going to be in charge of these cameras. You'll see a whole bunch of cops quitting, and they'll be like, oh, no, I'm not going to be watched all day because they're doing something they're not supposed to be doing, if that makes any sense to anybody.
It does. Do you agree with that, Attorney Ansari?
Partially.
I agree with the fact that we can't trust the police, and we can't trust the district attorney, and we need body cams. However, and I also agree with the fact that when this legislation is passed, and there's the community police and the Fort Worth police, they're going to be pissing a contest. And I didn't say that there would not be. And if you know American history, and I'm sure that most of us do realize that all the battles that we had, especially the civil rights battle, lasted from the early 30s and 20s. It wasn't really the 60s that we think that, but it was a huge battle between the black lawyers that culminated with Thurgood Marshall dealing with Jim Crow laws and separate equals. And this battle took from the 40s until the legislation, Brown versus Board of Education, which was 54. So this is a battle. I mean, we've been in a war for 400 years. So this is just another battle line that's being drawn that we have to put in a line in the sand that we are going to stick with. So we're not going to let you kill our children, our women and children, and us, and our members, our challenged people anymore. So we are going to have community police. And so when the legislation is in place, and we get away with officers saying, no, you community police can't come over here. So, no, we have legislation where we can come over here. Now we can remove an officer because he violated the law. He violated the legislation. Police don't learn anything. Like, and I agree with the brother when he said that they're just like, they're public servants. So they have to serve the public. They don't have this special aura that judges put on them and the district attorney surround them with. And this would, and having community police would reduce that aura, because now we say, well, we have other police. And those police departments have to be adjudicated to be competent to look at a crime. So it's going to be a fight. And everything we've done in America has been this way. So
we can't hear
America
you.
Is. Can you
attorney, we cannot hear you.
We cannot make out
what you're saying. That's better.
Okay. It's going to be a fight. But we have to arm ourselves with legislation, community policing legislation. We have to arm ourselves. Now we have a course to even train the police. Now, there's international standards of policing on excessive force and arrest and all of that. And so there's a way to present and operate as civilian police departments. So we can train the Fort Worth police. And I'm not talking about racial sensitivity training, just the training on what is excessive force, what is the proper way to arrest and to de-escalate, and when do you use the steps from arrest from a moderate force all the way up to excessive and deadly force. So once we have, because there's no policy. I mean, there's policy, police have policy, but policy is not like law. Law is overcomes policy all the time because it's law. So any internal business can have a policy. You can't wear a shirt. You can't wear come in here without shoes, but is that the law? No, the law is different. So I'm talking about putting laws in place and putting a structure in place where we have community police who are getting paid from the city just like the other police
and have the same
power that the other police have. They are just our community police. So that's where if this layer of protection that is more than just having cameras, cams that they can turn on and turn off. This is something that they can't turn on and turn off because the police, the community police are there on the scene taking reports and interviewing witnesses.
Got you. Let's take
protection.
We're going to take one more call, attorney, I'm sorry. We're going to go to 817-721. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Good evening. 817. This is Eddie Griffin.
Good evening. Hey, Eddie.
I was just calling to let everybody know that you're doing a good job, and I wanted to say that the training that everybody says that we need for the Fort Worth Police Department, we had that, or we should still have that. That was created by Chief Joel Fitzgerald, and it was created by the Department of Justice grant money. And the program addresses all the issues that they're talking about, excessive force, de-escalation, all of that. But the thing it is that there was resistance to that type of training from the very beginning. And when they got rid of Joel Fitzgerald, it seems to me that they either abolished the Procedural Justice Department that was created, or else they scaled it back. At any rate, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. That program has, that training program has been drafted, has been implemented. It just has not been effective because the officers online haven't adhered to it.
Wow. Well, that's good to know. God, Eddie, you called in like the last few minutes, so we won't be able to really break that down. Maybe we'll do this on another show. Listen, I want to say thank you to Attorney Mustafa Ansari for calling in tonight, Attorney Leon Reed, Elizabeth Roper, and Bob Willoughby, as well as all of the callers. Attorney Ansari, do you have anything in closing before we get out of here?
Just to say that I would suggest that we look at the structure, at the community policing model, because there's no such thing as police reform, and we have to come up with a way, and this is the way that we believe that could deteriorate that the police cover-ups.
All right. All right, y'all, that's going to be it. I think we did due diligence tonight on police reform. Hopefully somebody can send this tape to Chief Noakes, and he can see we are at least opening up the conversation. Maybe next time he can join us as we talk about police reform. We're not trying to say we have all the answers. We're just saying we're concerned, and we feel like unless we open up the conversation about the need for police reform, we're not going to get any changes. So, again, tonight, we're not saying we have all the answers. We're just saying we're concerned and we see a need for change. So, y'all, until next Friday, this has been Let's Talk Fort Worth, talking about police reform. Good night.
good cop rolling with that bad cop. What you doing, boy? Turn in that blood clot, fuck shot. They fly through the truck spot, robot. You give a damn who the fuck shot. Clean cop, fucking with that dirty cop. Don't act like your ass never heard of that. Clean cop, rolling with that mean cop. Still trying to act proud as a peacock. You know that mean cop might need a detox. Motherfucker tried to pull me out my repot, but I swing like Jack in a beanstalk. Chop him down when these bitches try to lock me down. Hit the ground, hit the turf, walk the earth. Q, kidnap your mind, Patty Hurst. Bust a verse that'll make your ass hit reverse. Kill the curse that was placed on the universe. West Coast warlord, black it in the black night. Fuck a black and white when they ain't acting right. Good cop, filling out your report. Bad cop asking you to distort. Bad cop asking you to lie in court. Then another young brother. Then another young sister. Off course. Why these motherfuckers still on the golf course?
Black police showing out for the white cop. White police showing out for the white cop.